This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, what's up? 2 hours on tap today. Wes Reynolds alongside on a Monday and plenty to get to here on The Edge at a loaded show at that Tim Murray's usual spot here on Mondays to talk a little college football at the bottom of this hour. George Jihori, PFF, is going to join us, and Drew Martin from Sports Memo will discuss a little bit of college football with us as well. It's a college football Monday here today because we have two more conferences getting in action this weekend. Mountain West, Big Ten, a lot of previews there. What's up, Wes?
How you doing, JVT? Good to see you. It's been, a whole 12 hours
since
we last met?
Yeah. Except just over 12 hours when we were on the opening lines, which, by the way, it was a fantastic show. Go to vsun.com/podcast and make sure you check it out. Speaking of football and the National Football League, let's start with Monday night, which I just learned from our producer today, Aaron Oster, that the first game's at 2 p.m. our time. I had no idea. I thought it was like at 5, and it is Eastern time.
Yeah.
So let's discuss this, and we can start actually with the late game because this is the more intriguing of the two, at least in terms of line moves and the market and things like this. And it was a game, of course, we had discussed quite a bit. You see the Chiefs there, 5.5 with a total of 56.5. But I wanted to start with Arizona and Dallas because we have officially flipped and gone through pick. The Dallas Cowboys are a one-point favorite almost everywhere you look with a total of 55.5. If you remember, right, this was one of the three games we talked about, and we're waiting now, right? We'll have more on those, but we're waiting to see if this is going to be the final shoe to fall in terms of the three overreactions. The look-ahead line was Dallas -3. Opened, again, after the Dak Prescott injury, to Arizona -3. Now we are here at this point right now, but it's worth pointing out that Chris Andrews in the offseason, I talked about this with him earlier in the week, and he has said this multiple times on multiple shows on this network. He believed the difference, Wes, between Dak Prescott and Andy Dalton was 2 points. We have finally reached that point right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think both of us got in +3 on the buy upwards to get to that key number. And now you're seeing -1 out there. And I had a feeling Dallas was going to take the money. Look, they're 0-5 against the spread. Now, plenty of tickets will come on the Cardinals. So it'll probably, I would guess, be a pretty good split on this game. But there is obviously a drop-off from Dak Prescott to Andy Dalton. However, Andy Dalton has started in this league for 9 seasons, and he's not an old man. He's only 32 years old. He's 71-60-2 as a starter. That's respectable with what he had to work with in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had his fair share of offensive line issues there, so he should be used to this by now with the situation currently in Dallas with a couple starters out. But I do like Dallas in the spot here. Look, they're leading the NFL in yardage at 488 per game. Third in scoring, 32.6 points. They actually score the quickest in the league. The average possession per drive is 217, which is part of the reason, or at least part and parcel, why they've put the defense kind of in jail a little bit, plus the fact that the defense is dealing with injuries. At least Leighton Vander Esch is back tonight, which I think is a big key. Dalton does have more weapons around him in Dallas than he ever had in Cincinnati. Zeke Elliott looks like he's getting going. He had 2 touchdowns on the ground last week. The defense obviously has been porous. They're dead last in points allowed, 36 a game. But you had Arizona being a road favorite, and that's what gave me trepidation on backing them last week, even against the Jets, because I was like, well, you know, this team is a young team, but they're not used to the role of being a road favorite, and we see those role reversals often work against a team, but the Jets were so bad that Arizona got the cover. So.
And we should mention, too, and I'm sorry if you did this because I was looking up something really quickly, the Carolina game, right? That was they were favored on the road in that spot against the Panthers as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and one of the things also, not all numbers and stats are created the same. So right. You look at Arizona's defense. If you watch them just from an eye test visual standpoint, you can see that the defense has improved, although Chandler Jones is now out for the rest of the season with the bicep injury, so there goes your best pass rusher. Last year, they allowed 402 yards a game. That was the worst in the league. This year, only 346, so that ranks 10th, and they're 5th in scoring defense, 20.4 points a game. However, look at who they've played. They played the two worst offenses in the National Football League, that being the Washington football team and the New York Jets. So don't overreact. You really got to kind of dig a little bit deeper, at least take the next step in terms of looking at these numbers. So the defense has improved, but has it really improved that dramatically? I don't think so, based on the competition you've seen.
Yeah, I would completely agree. 20th in overall defensive efficiency, if you look at Football Outsiders, the Arizona Cardinals. 26th, if you look at pass defense efficiency. So to your point, they're not a team that pressures quarterbacks a lot either. 13th in overall pressures right now. 14 in sacks, but like you mentioned, you lose your best pass rusher at this point. And so I'm not sure if you can take advantage of Dallas from an offensive line standpoint. And overall, it's just where you and I currently sit and not where the market is now. But again, when you're talking about when this number first came out, a 6-point difference between the two quarterbacks is incorrect. A 2-point difference is probably more where they should be. But if you're talking about the difference between Andy Dalton and Dak Prescott being a full touchdown, I believe that's incorrect. I think you would believe that's incorrect. And I think the market clearly believes that was incorrect, and that's why it's corrected itself right now.
And I think it's almost like that rally around the family type.
Brady calls it the fallen star theory.
Yep, absolutely. And you see that more often than not, like in night-to-night action with the NBA, not as much anymore because guys are resting more often than not. But I think that could be the case here. And look, people are going to look at that ATS record and be like, Dallas hadn't covered a game all season. So how are they going to cover it with Andy Dalton instead of Dak Prescott? But that's when it tends to happen. So I do like Dallas in the spot. And I mean, even at -1, I'm not recommending laying the worst of the number, but you're pretty much saying they're going to win outright. And I think that they are tonight.
Yep. And then the other game, of course, and this one now, as we know, starting at 2 p.m. Pacific time. It's so nuts. Kansas City on the road against Buffalo. Opener here was Kansas City -3 with a total of 55. Now we are seeing upwards of 5.5 with a total of 56.5. So my initial thought is here, look, this Buffalo Bills team has, I think, surprised. I think a lot of people thought, Wes, before that Tennessee game, when you talk to somebody and just got the temperature of the room, the initial thought would be, well, Buffalo's good defensively, right? And they remember the team from last year. Forgetting, too, by the way, that that team last year was actually the 20s in terms of their rush defense. They weren't the best defense in the world.
Their pass rush was good.
Their pass rush was very good. But this is a defense that is banged up. Linebackers have been in and out of the lineup. Defensive backs, Trey White has been in and out of the lineup. They are currently 27th in overall defensive efficiency, 24th against the pass, 22nd against the run. It showed in times against the Tennessee Titans on Tuesday night. Now you get the Kansas City Chiefs in the spot, right? And I call it the spot, like capital T, capital S, coming off of a loss at home against a divisional opponent like the Las Vegas Raiders. Market clearly bumping this up to 5.5. This is not going to be a game I will be involved with tonight. I didn't have a good read. I think I'd rather be on the Kansas City side. I understand the support from 3.5 to where it's at right now. The Bills are a good team, but their schedule was relatively soft through the first 4 weeks of the season. They met an opponent that was near their level in Tennessee and got it handed to them. And I think this is the start of a stretch where the Bills start to come back down to earth here a little bit.
Yeah, and I haven't decided if I'm going to do anything with this game or not. And what you said about Buffalo's defense, true. 28th in DVOA against the other team's number one wide receivers. 20th in DVOA against the tight ends. Obviously, Kansas City's got a pretty darn good one with Travis Kelce. And the blitz also, the Bills also blitz at the third highest rate in the league. So look, if you don't get to Mahomes, he's going to make you pay. But in terms of the spot or the scenario, my lean on this game would be Buffalo in the first half. And okay, I'll tell you why, because you kind of saw it a little bit yesterday. Tennessee and Buffalo obviously played on Tuesday night. So they're on a short week. So it's like, okay, and one of the reasons I liked Houston in that spot was because Tennessee was on a short week and Houston kind of got the monkey off their back, finally getting their first win. So then the pressure's off. Now you can just go play ball and don't have to worry about that. But what happened was Tennessee came out with the energy in the first half. And on that short week, it's like the urgency is right there. Like, we got to get off to a really good start from the get-go, from the absolute opening kickoff. And maybe you see the same thing with Buffalo here. You're now starting to see, obviously, threes across the board with increased vig as the line has now gone to 5.5, this being for the first half. So you'd probably be taking +3 even money, as I see -3 minus $1.20. Wait on it, because I think the Chiefs are going to continue to get bet throughout the afternoon up to kickoff. And maybe you can get a little value if you can get a 3.5. I don't know if one is going to pop. It's probably just going to be raise the vig on the three because books don't want to come off that key number. But if I do anything with that, I'm going to take the Bills first half to say, okay, short week, they're going to come out with energy right away against Kansas City. And then gradually as the game wears on, I do think Kansas City pulls away.
Yeah, I'm looking across the board. 5.5, yep, straight out. Just actually in every single shop, at least on my screen right now, for this one. Actually, and to be honest with you, too, this sets up an interesting spot. You and I talked a little bit about this yesterday on the opening lines, right? Where, again, how you handicap this week plays into next week, obviously. If you believe that the Chiefs are going to come in here and you're going to lay like 3.5, 4, whatever, win maybe going away here against the Buffalo Bills, it sets up an interesting scenario because the Bills are an 11.5-point favorite on the road next week against the New York Jets. And so if they're going to lose this game and you believe they're going to lose in a similar fashion to Tennessee, I think it would behoove you to look at the Jets plus 11 because I don't think that's going to be the number after the result if that's the result that comes tonight.
Right, because people are going to clearly bet the Bills on the bounce back, and they're betting against the Jets every single week. And look, even the worst teams in the league, like we said, it's probably harder to go 0-16 than it is really to go 16-0. So even the worst teams, odds makers are going to keep adjusting the numbers because they want to attract at least some action on the other side. And not just, I think Derek Stevens was on Follow the Money today talking about that. They're just fading the Jets every week, you know, just kind of giving his observations of the NFL betting. But eventually they pop the number enough. So you might get 13 with the Jets. Right. You could maybe get 14 with the Jets. So yeah, that would be an interesting spot, especially if Buffalo somehow pulls the upset. Then the price really goes to the moon.
All right, so those are your two Monday night games. As the lines move throughout the day, we will update those. But we do have two leagues getting started in college football. And I wanted to go through both of these leagues as we're going to see them, Wes. First big picture, then we'll get to some of the games on the slate. Big Ten, though, your neck of the woods. Ohio State over at DraftKings, the odds on favor by a wide margin to win the conference, minus 400. Penn State plus 550. Wisconsin 6-1. Then you get to the double digits. Michigan 20. Minnesota 28. Iowa 33. Nebraska 60. And then the triples where it's Purdue at 100. Indiana 150. Michigan State 250. Northwestern 350. Maryland 400 and Illinois 500. You see the odds right there on your screen if you're watching on VSiN.com. So obviously Ohio State, very good shot at winning this thing. We're talking about just 10, 11 overall starters returning, but really good depth, some good transfers as well. And of course you still have Justin Fields. Anything outside of Ohio State worth looking at the number perspective to win the conference in your mind?
You know, not a ton here, JVT. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could maybe sponsor a Minnesota at 28-1 if you're really going. I mean, I can't go way down the board with the Marylands and the Michigan States. Michigan State's in a total rebuild with the new head coach.
Right. By the way, a new head coach who came after signing day, didn't recruit a single guy on the roster.
Right. Right, absolutely. And so Minnesota maybe at 28-1. They do lose their OC. Their OC is now at Penn State, Kirk Ciaracco. So I did like what I saw out of Minnesota, though. Remember, they beat Penn State. Remember, they were undefeated in November last year. So
did they make it in the top six, I believe, in the college football playoff rankings, didn't they?
Yes. And look, P.J. Fleck can recruit.
Yes.
And
row the boat.
They're rowing the boat up there in Minneapolis, and they do get nine starters back on offense. But you look at the other teams in the West. Wisconsin is breaking in a new quarterback. Jack Cohn has been injured, obviously.
And by the way, just real quick, they are going by divisions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They're still going to play.
ACC is going like whole conference. Yeah. Some of these teams, some of these conferences are changing rules up. I don't even think the Mountain West we're going to discuss. The Mountain West hasn't even come out with a solid format yet as to how they're going to determine who their champion is. So
they play it by ear over there in Denver. But and you look at the Big Ten West, Iowa's got to break in a new quarterback because they had Nathan Stanley graduate, who was a 4-year starter. So you're losing from some first round guys on the offensive line as well. Northwestern has a new quarterback. Now, Peyton Ramsey, the Indiana graduate.
There you go, baby.
Should provide him a boost. Yes. He's the best guy, and he's proven he can win games in this conference. But it's still an adjustment there to move the ball for there. Nebraska's got an awful schedule. They play Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Penn State in three of their first four games. Purdue gets Rondale Moore back, but do they have enough defensively? And we'll talk a little bit more about Purdue's at least short-term issues later. So that would leave Minnesota in the West in terms of the team that probably has the least amount of question marks. Now, they're probably the fourth best team in the conference, considering you have Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan in the East. But Minnesota would be my value play there at 28-1. They do have nine starters back.
And as far as the Mountain West goes, this is an interesting year for the conference, at least for the Mountain West, considering that in any other year, if it was a full schedule, it might be like a year that is relatively good for the Mountain West. It looks somewhat deep this season. But you see the odds here. Boise State, the odds on favor, minus 200. After that, San Diego State at 4-1, Air Force 450, Wyoming 12-1, Colorado State 14-1, Fresno Fresno State 20-1, Hawaii 40, Nevada 50, as is Utah State. Then you get the three triple-digit teams, New Mexico, San Jose State, and UNLV. Quite a few new head coaches in this league this year as well. If I remember off the top of my head, I believe half the league. I think there's six new head coaches this year in the Mountain West. But overall, if we're talking about deeper on the board outside of Boise State, what I find fascinating, Wes, and you and I were talking about this off the air, and there is sometimes I have noticed, at least when it comes to some of the East Coast books like a DraftKings, there is some disconnect with program like lower tier conferences out here west. Nevada brings back 18 starters, 10 on offense, right? Your quarterback's back, your entire offensive line's back. You're in your fourth year under Novell. They're 50-1 to win this conference. And I find that surprising given everything that the Wolfpack has back this season. Now they have essentially what is an eliminator right away because they are taking on Wyoming in week one. And that is going to be huge because Wyoming is also very live. Craig Bohl probably has his best offense that he's had up to this point, entire offensive line, backfield, and a sophomore quarterback who performed very well and was 6-2 as a starter. But I do think like Nevada at 50-1, if we're going down the board, I'm really surprised they're that far down given what they have coming back this year.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I know you've done a lot of work on the Mountain West for the VSiN, the abridged or updated VSiN college football betting guide, which will be out at some point later this week.
That's right. It will, as will Point Spread Weekly on Wednesdays. All right. When we come back, we're going to go back to the National Football League. We talked about those three games from last week, the look ahead lines, the reactions. Well, what are the results? We will tell you when we return. VSiN is now available on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. We've partnered with the Racetrack Network to deliver VSiN on your connected TV for only $4 a month. Visit RTN.tv to learn more and download the VSiN Roku or Amazon Fire TV app. While you're there, check out everything the Racetrack Network has to offer. Go to RTN.tv, sign up, get the VSiN app on your Roku or Amazon Fire TV today. That's RTN.tv. Do I do the cliche? For the cost of a cup of coffee every month, you can watch us every single time. All right, National Football League. So, if you remember, and I think we should start to do these now every single week, Wes, because at least this week so far, and even if the Cowboys-Cardinals result does not come in profitable for you 2 out of 3, it is worth using look-ahead lines the week before, obviously, and then judging what happens in the game and then what is going to happen with the adjustment on the lines, right? So let's bring up what we saw this week, right? Because we had three examples this past week of lines from the look ahead that had adjusted, and for multiple reasons, but by a wide margin, right? So you have this right here. Packers at Buccaneers. The look ahead was Tampa Bay -3. It opened Green Bay -1, actually closed 2.5. Tampa Bay wins, covers, right? Rams and 49ers. Look ahead line was San Francisco -3. 49ers get shellacked by the Dolphins. Reopens at Rams -3. San Francisco ends up winning and covering. Now we have tonight, right? TBD, of course, Dallas opening 3. Or excuse me, look ahead was 3. Opening Arizona -3, now currently sitting in Dallas -3. The market really coming in and correcting that. The result has yet to be determined. But the key here, at least for the first two games, Wes, as we discussed, these markets moved in the result of Tampa Bay, Green Bay. The market moved 5.5 points because of a result. No injury whatsoever, no change to the roster just because of a result. And the same thing with San Francisco, Los Angeles, it moves 6 points because of a result, not because of an injury or anything like that. Yes, maybe the argument can be made, but we didn't think Jimmy Garoppolo was fully healthy. Yes, but he was still going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not worth a 6-point adjustment. And here we are today. Not only do those two teams cover, they win outright, by the way, in dominant fashion.
Right.
So clearly the look-ahead line, I think it's safe to say, at least in those two right now, clearly the look-ahead line was where it should have been. And the market, again, and this is a lesson for everybody out there, you don't react to the result. You take everything right together, and then you formulate an opinion. But a result should not change your power rating. And for those two games, actually, for all, and for those two games, it did.
And there's not a sport on planet Earth involving betting that has more overreactions and overadjustments than the NFL, since you're only playing a game.
Right, it's a small sample size sport.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why you're seeing these move, and these look-ahead lines over at Westgate Superbook do come out on Wednesday. So not for the Sunday games, but the following Sunday games for the following week. So yeah, you could take advantage of the discrepancies. And we talked about, we bet all three of them, bet all against all three of the overreactions, two for two so far. So at worst, we're going to go 67% over these three games. If the Cowboys get there tonight, we'll go three for three. But yeah, you're seeing just the perception, because bettors are always going to be prone, especially newer bettors. Mm-hmm. They're going to be prone to bet what they saw last. The last impression is what's going to stick with them, not maybe the impression of 2 weeks before or 3 weeks before. You've got to take it all into total context. I think really when you're evaluating a team, you can't just go off one bad performance or one good performance.
Right. And there was this push, especially for a team like the Los Angeles Rams, like we had on later in the week last week, we had Steve Mackinnon on it for Points Per Weekly. His power ratings, he had bumped Los Angeles all the way to the fourth best team in the NFL. And, you know, I told him, I was like, oh, well, I think that's surprising. I kind of disagree with that, considering who they had beaten as well. Like, you always have to make sure you're taking everything into consideration.
They beat the entire NFC least, right, and, so to speak.
And by the way, this isn't for Mac. Like, it's not a shot at Steve. He's not the only person that really had a lot of faith in the Los Angeles Rams, who, as you said, were first place in the NFC East after the first 5 weeks of the season. So, again, I think it's just a lesson as you look at all of this to take all of it into consideration and as you move forward. So, with that, Cardinals and Cowboys still, of course, waiting. Jury's still out. We'll see what happens later tonight. I have selected two games that we saw some major look-ahead line adjustments, and again, off of results this week, right? Only two, and actually involves the Buccaneers again. So the Buccaneers and the Raiders set to take on one another. Look ahead line, Wes, was Tampa Bay pick. Of course, the Raiders off this week. Well, now it's Tampa Bay minus 2.5 is what the market opens.
Threes are starting the show now into the market.
Yep, so it opened 2.5, now up to 3. So again, a 3-point adjustment off of a result. And the other, of course, Jags and Chargers. Chargers minus 6.5. Again, Chargers are off because the Jags lose to the Lions. Now up to open 9.5 and down to, I think, 8, right?
Yeah, and everybody has seen that adjustment kind of that we talked about on the opening lines program.
Right. What did I tell you? I was like, I've been fading Jacksonville almost every week. I'll take 9.5.
Now it's like, let's get on the train. And even not getting the 9.5, there's still some 8.5s. 9's not a real key number per se, so that's not going to scare me off. Yeah, I like the Jags here in this spot. Chargers could be flat off that bye.
Yep, and we have seen multiple times now. Look, the Chargers, relatively good team, but building leads and blowing them has been their thing. We've seen them multiple times now. And by the way, against good teams. The Bucks, the Saints, and the Chiefs.
Right.
Against all three of those teams. All right. So those are the two games we'll keep an eye on this week. When we come back, though, we get back to college football. We talked about the Big Ten and the Mountain West from a big picture perspective. Let's take a look at the schedules this coming weekend. With the Big Ten back in action this weekend, get ready for all the big games with BetRivers Sportsbook. Take advantage of Big Return Special. Make your first deposit of $50. Get $100 in free bets in exchange. If you're already a member, you can enjoy all our daily special bets exclusively on BetRivers.com. I wonder if they're going to have a Mountain West promotion. How do you think the Mountain West football catches on in the Midwest? As always, get great customer service and only a one-time playthrough at BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. First-time depositors, listen to my voice, and new users only. Got to be 21. Playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER, Indiana, 1-800-9 with it, Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. All right, so we talked about the two conferences, Mountain West, Big Ten, in the big picture. Schedules, of course, this coming weekend is a very thick schedule in terms of college football. So overall, we only have 7 minutes here, Wes. So give us, in terms of the Big Ten at least, and I know we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but for the audience who's just joining us here today, what you're looking at in terms of the Big Ten from a side perspective or a totals perspective this coming week.
From the first week, the one that obviously stood out to me is my alma mater, Indiana University, which Penn State opened 9.
9, yeah.
And now it's 6.5. I would need 7 or more, and if I have to buy it, I will, but I would prefer to get a 7 and maybe even a 7.5 and maybe – the general betting public will bet Penn State up. But it's a tricky spot for Penn State here because they have Ohio State next week. And it's really tricky for all these Big Ten teams because, look, usually when you start the season, normally in September, who are you playing in your opener?
Right.
You're getting Indiana against Ball State. You're getting Penn State against Buffalo. You're getting Ohio State against Akron or Bowling Green. And with all due respect, and we all love the MAC.
You're getting warming up. You're warming up.
Yeah, we all love the MAC, and we're looking forward to that starting, I believe, next week on the weeknights or the week after. Mm-hmm. But anywho, those are the games where you make those mistakes. That's why these teams paid the several hundred thousand to million plus dollars for these guaranteed games. Yeah, absolutely, because you can have 2-3 turnovers and have 125 yards and penalties and make these mistakes early on where you haven't played a game, and you can still beat those teams. Now you're playing big conference competition right away, and with the Indiana spot, Indiana really probably should have won in Happy Valley last year. They had the most yards on Penn State, even more than Ohio State did, other than the Memphis game in the Cotton Bowl. That was the worst defensive performance for Penn State last year. And also what happened with Indiana, their top receiver and one of the top guys in the Big Ten at the receiver position, Wop Fillior, got hit and took a shot to the head, was out the rest of the game. It was supposed to be a targeting penalty, but of course it was not called. So that really changed the complexion of the game. So you got an Indiana team that I think might be very, very hungry because they've had two games the last 2 years where they've lost by 5 and they've lost by 7 points to this Penn State team. And that's kind of been the thing with Indiana and really been the story of the program of late. They can compete with the top teams in the conference, but they never have enough to get across the finish line. And that's why I would want a key number of 7 or more on Indiana. But I think that's what these guys are betting. I don't know if this is a setup to come back on the Penn State side with Penn State having Ohio State on deck. We know that James Franklin, I think he's 4-1 against the spread, last 5 against Ohio State. And they always play this team tough. Yep. So Penn State is breaking in the new offensive coordinator, Kirk Ciaralca. Now, Sean Clifford and a lot of the offense is back. There is a rumor, too, that Jerny Brown, the running back, might not be available for this game. So that could be a little bit of a reason for the line move anyway. But Penn State also had their top guy on defense, their linebacker, Penn State's linebacker U, right? So they're always really stacked at that position. But that top linebacker was an opt-out for Penn State, and he was their leading tackler, Micah Parsons. He'll be a first-round draft pick next year. So the spot says Indiana, but I do want a better number.
That's all you got in the Mountain, or excuse me, in the Big Ten overall?
Well, there's
can I ask you about one?
Yeah, you can.
So Michigan State and Rutgers, 14 the open with a total of 49.5. I thought this was interesting. We kind of alluded to it at the beginning, right? Because all of these coaches are in tough spots, especially if you're starting anew, right, at a spot like Mel Tucker is here. And that's what I find interesting about this spot overall is that not only are you taking over a team which you got basically like a very limited offseason with, as we mentioned, you didn't recruit a single guy on this roster. You came in after signing day. I think Michigan State's spot here out of all of these teams that are breaking in a new staff, I think, are one of the most unique ones in the country.
Yeah, I think so, too. And also Rutgers, what's old is new again. Greg Schiano comes back to New Jersey to coach Rutgers. And look, he did a great job. He got them to, I think, number 7 in the country 1 year and really turned around that program, put a lot of guys in the National Football League. But that was in the Big East. This is now the Big Ten. This is a much tougher rebuild for a team like Rutgers. Michigan State, I have no idea who's going to play quarterback. Rocky Lombardi is the returner who did start 3 games last year when Brian Lewerke got hurt. But Michigan State had one of the worst offenses in the conference. So it's always a little bit dangerous to lay big points with them. New offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. They got to replace 8 defensive starters. So that's one I don't have as good of a read on. A couple other ones that I'll touch on just briefly. Nebraska, Ohio State, like we say, guys are going to bet the premium team on the openers because they know that line's not going to be there on game day. So they're just trying to beat the number. I think Ohio State opened at circa 23. You're now seeing 26, 26.5, even some 27s pop up in some faraway places. How much is Ohio State going to want to show in this game because they got Penn State on deck? Do you really want to empty your playbook if you're Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson in this first game, even though you know you're the better team than Nebraska? So do they really just want to go out and smash Nebraska? And I think people know, bettors know that late bettors are going to bet that because it's like, oh, they got to make an impression in the polls. Well, let me tell you something. If Ohio State goes unbeaten in the Big Ten, which they're projected to do, it doesn't matter where they're going to be seated. They're going to be in the college football playoff. So I think that style points angle could get a little bit overrated. So I'm waiting on this Nebraska line to see if there's any resistance. I would lean to that side just because I think Ohio State is kind of going to want to get through it and make sure they're healthy for Penn State the following week.
I should note in the Mountain West, we've had some interesting line moves here as well, one of which, at least the bigger move, Hawaii at Fresno State. Bulldogs open an 8-point favorite over at Circa with a total of 69.5. We're now looking at Fresno State laying 4 with a total of 65.5.
Right.
Todd Graham takes over for the Rainbows, but this is a team that is loaded with talent, at least in terms of the offense. Standpoint. Chase, I think it's Cordero, however you pronounce his last name, a kid with a really high ceiling who appeared in almost every single game last year for them as well. Whenever Rolovich got sick of watching the dreadlock kid, who I can't remember his name.
Yeah, trying to remember.
Right, but throw interception after interception. But you have a quarterback who's coming in with game experience, did start a game for them last year as well. I'm not surprised to see this move off of that 8-4 now because of Fresno State, the lack of experience at quarterback in other key spots. And then Wyoming opens 2, gets up to 4, and it looks like that's the ceiling for this number. 3.5 starting to pop up globally, but we'll see if that starts to come back towards that 4.
Right. Rolovich didn't lead the cupboard bearer on the islands. Rolovich and staff, of course, now in Pullman with Washington State.
Trying to find the name of this kid. I'll have that on the other
McDonald.
Side.
McDonald.
Yeah. So we'll have
McDonald.
That. We'll have Tim Murray with us when we come back. We're not done with college football. We wrap up this first hour, get his thoughts on a couple of things, including what do you make a line between Alabama and Clemson? If you need to hire, you need Indeed. You instantly get a list of quality candidates from the Indeed's resume database. The moment you sponsor a job, get started at Indeed.com/credit. It is the HGRV Sin, the Sports Betting Network. Wes Reynolds, Jonathan Von Tobel. Ooh, by the way, I should mention, maybe impending legal trouble here. There is actually a very popular podcast that is I'll say their creds in terms of journalistic standards is very high. They have broken some stories, but it's called The Edge as well. So I'm preparing to sue. I'm just saying, because I feel like our show is much more popular. Anyway, before we get to Tim Murray, 30 seconds, Wes, you wanted to mention Iowa taking on Purdue this week.
Yeah, game 343-344. And we mentioned last night when we were talking with Matt Eumanns on opening lines, Purdue opens 2 at Circa and gets bet all the way to -4 for Iowa. It is priced in the line because I can tell because the line is not moving. Jeff Brohm, Purdue head coach, has tested positive for COVID-19. So offensive coordinator, that being his brother, Brian Brohm, who is going to serve as the interim head coach and also going to be the play caller on Saturday. So keep in mind, because that news broke a couple hours ago and you've seen basically no movement in the line. So the early bettors seem to know that that was at play here. So I was hoping maybe that there you'd get a second batch of piggybackers that would drive that line up even more, because I don't think this is a bad spot for Purdue with Iowa breaking in a new quarterback and a lot of personnel on that O-line.
Well, let's bring in Tim Murray on this. And Tim, I think you know the value of a coach in terms of a point spread, because Nick Saban made some halftime adjustments for you to keep the Georgia Bulldogs under 25.5 points on Saturday, right?
Yeah, it was nice. I was a little fortunate to get the team total under with Alabama. But yeah, I mean, that's stuff that we talked about last week, guys. I played Alabama early in the week, and now we had a bit of a bizarre week with Nick Saban testing positive for COVID. Then would he end up coaching? And he ultimately did. But I think we're just in a unique circumstance, guys, where we saw it last year. I mean, that LSU offense might be the greatest offense. And we live in the greatest era or worst ever era, but meaning, you know, we instantly react to everything and say, oh, that was the best ever, or that was the worst ever. But what we saw last year from LSU might have been the greatest offense we've ever seen. And I don't think Alabama's on that level, but they're not too far behind. And that's why I looked at this game, even though under, you know, laying a touchdown, under a touchdown, I just felt like great offenses outweigh great defenses right now. And I was worried about Stetson Bennett, and he ended up turning the ball over a bit in the second half. So yeah, we were able to come home with that Alabama laying six. Now the team total, a little bit fortunate to get that one home too.
And Tim, this is football, right? It's not even like, I think it's the guys at Pro Football Focus have this conversation all the time. It's the conversation of the world of football analytics, that there is actually no great defense. It's just that defenses are beholden to the offense that they're going to face for the most part. And as a defense, because your job is literally to react, you're always going to be in a spot that you're behind the eight ball a little bit here. And now the way that football is heading, like these are good. This, I think it is, like, you can call it the Big 12-ification of football, whatever it is. Football is going to look more like what the Big 12 has been looking like for a while than it is like the old school slugfest SEC that we have seen in years past.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is a fair comparison. I'm going to go in your wheelhouse, JVT, because remember when the Warriors kind of became the Warriors, right? And everyone said, well, they're great offensively, but they stink defensively. Well, no, they didn't. They just played at such a high tempo that they actually were a pretty decent defensive team, but people just thought, well, they give up a lot of points, so they stink defensively. No, not necessarily. So I don't think Alabama stinks defensively. Mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, Ole Miss caught them in a unique spot with that up tempo. Alabama still got pros on that defense, and they've got good coaching. So I think they'll be able to stop you enough, like we saw on Saturday night, that they'll be able to make you mess up enough that their offense then will overpower you. And that's why, you know, as great as Georgia's defense is, I still think they probably are the best defense in the country, but you need to have this high power type of offense with the incredible weapons that Alabama's working with. And I don't know if a lot of people anticipated Mac Jones playing to this level. I expected him to play pretty highly. You know, once again, what do we think about when just general public guys, what do you think about when you think about the season ahead? You know, Mac Jones threw two pick sixes against Auburn. Ah, he stinks. No, if you look at the numbers, he was actually pretty good taking over for Tua last year. So when you pair him up with Mechie and Harris and Smith and all those guys, he is going to be a very capable quarterback. And that's what we're seeing right now. He has been impressive. This was his team to take over. He wasn't jumping into the fray like he did last year with Tua. So yeah, you're seeing a quality quarterback benefit from having first round talent all around him. And that's why Alabama and Clemson really are the right now the class until we see Ohio State. Now Ohio State, I think we'll jump right in there, but yeah, when you look at Alabama and Clemson so far, to me, it's 1-2 and then a pretty sizable gap.
Yeah, so Tim, let's flip ahead here, and I'll ask you about the upcoming Alabama game this Saturday, Alabama at Tennessee. And look, JVT and I talk about this all the time, and we mentioned on opening lines, when Circa puts out these college football openers at 11 a.m. Pacific on Sunday, these are pretty much exclusively professional bettors that are just taking numbers and not necessarily taking positions. They knew that Alabama line, what did it open, JVT? 17, I believe?
Yep.
And now we're seeing 21.5. So it's like, well, we know the line's not going to be 17 on game day, so they're just going to lay a number here. But now you're all of a sudden seeing this number creep into the 21.5 point territory. Probably will get higher because bettors are going to bet Alabama because they're the premium team. What do you make of this spot, though, Tim? Look, you're absolutely buying at the low spot on the Tennessee Volunteers, and then Alabama comes off that big high against Georgia.
Yeah, no, sometimes, though, with Alabama, I feel like a lot of the rules don't necessarily fit them just because they almost feel like they're machine-like at times. But, yeah, I mean, you're looking at Tennessee coming off of just an absolute embarrassing showing, and they've gotten their butt kicked these past 2 weeks. So I would certainly think about at home, if this gets north of 21, this would be an intriguing play. And the first half has been so profitable for teams like Clemson and Alabama for recent years, right? I'm curious if this is a spot where you look at that first half line. Is this a spot where Tennessee comes out and tries to, you know, throw a haymaker, tries to just throw the kitchen sink at Alabama and maybe keep that game close going into the locker rooms? Look, Alabama wasn't perfect in the first half against Georgia, right? And then they made second half adjustments and they were able to overcome that. I don't think this Tennessee team, in my opinion, you know, has enough to stick with an Alabama for 60 minutes. But if that first half line keeps creeping up there, guys, I think a first half play on Tennessee, knowing coming off of back-to-back embarrassing losses, Alabama riding this all-time wave of, you know, crushing Georgia, and they'll get praised all week for the way that they performed. Maybe this is a spot where you look at Tennessee first half to keep this thing close. Jeremy Pruitt going up against, you know, his former former boss, but I don't know. I don't know when we're gonna see a former employee of Nick Saban beat him. But what is it? 0-22 now after what we saw on Saturday night. So I don't know if Tennessee has the firepower to stick with Alabama for 60 minutes. But the first half is intriguing to me. Whatever that ends up being later in the week.
Tim Murray with us, of course. He's gonna be on with Humans later today. My guys in the desert. So, Tim, let's talk about this. We're talking about Alabama. Obviously, we've seen them in action, Clemson as well. I would assume they would be within your top five of teams we have seen playing up to this point. Who would round out your other three?
Yeah, and this is an exercise I wanted to do with you guys, and I'm going to do it with Matt, too, because, you know, I let it be known, I'm a Notre Dame fan, and I sat there and watched Notre Dame slug their way through an ugly win against Louisville. I don't know if Notre Dame's a top five team. They're ranked third in the AP, but you've got to put teams in your top five. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Teams that have played, who is in your top five? So everybody said Notre Dame stinks, Notre Dame stinks. Well, guess what? They didn't lose to Florida State, just like we saw from UNC. And you could say, well, you know, UNC dropped some passes. Still, they were in the game. They were losing to a team that was, what, a 14, 15-point underdog to them, a team that Notre Dame just smashed. So can I put Cincinnati in there? I thought they were going to lose this past weekend to Tulsa if that game doesn't get postponed due to COVID. Do you put BYU in there? A team that slipped past, what, UTSA 27-20? So many teams have holes. So I would say my top five right now would be 1, Alabama, 2, Clemson, 3, Georgia. I would put Texas A&M in there at 4. You know, that loss, as bad as it was, doesn't look as bad now. And I think they're turning the corner, that win over Florida. And then I'd probably put Notre Dame 5, just about a process of elimination. They've got a good defense. The offense needs to get a lot better. But if you're going to make a top 5, you have to fill it with 5 teams. So that's where I would stand right now of teams that have played. So what about you guys? Who fills out that top 5? Because I think it's Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama pretty solidly in there. But 4 and 5 is just kind of pick a name out of a hat.
Right. Tim, you mentioned that, and I asked Humans about that last night in terms of the opening line show. How much do you drop Notre Dame off that performance? And look, it was windy weather in South Bend. It was just kind of one of those sloppy games, really. And Notre Dame obviously doesn't come near close to covering. I would probably still have them 5th. And I'm glad you mentioned A&M, because looking at that schedule the rest of the year, look, they're in the SEC West and Alabama beat them. So if they end up tied and Alabama gets a loss, Alabama goes to the SEC championship game. But Texas A&M, I think, is still not out of playoff consideration just with that one loss. That schedule is very manageable. So keep an eye on that team, because we're doing the abridged college football betting guide, and it's like, okay, who would be your top 4 picks? And I almost put Texas A&M in there. I still think Georgia has a chance for more quality wins. But would you not put Ohio State, though, in your top 5 right now? I know they haven't played, but we know the capability, and we have to judge, obviously, based on previous years.
Yeah, if we're doing with all teams, Ohio State would be number 3 or 4. They're going to be really, really good. So I was just saying, an exercise of teams that have played, you know, where do you put Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, you know, squeak past Tulsa week 1. So there's just a lot of question marks with these teams. But Ohio State is the real deal.
Tim's going to be with us every single Monday at this time. Talk a little college football with him. Tim, thanks a lot. Have a good show later today. All right, man.
All right, boys. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, thanks, you got him. That one, Tim Murray, up on Twitter. All right, we'll come back. George Horry's going to join us. Pro Football Focus. We get back to the National Football League. Got a lot to get to with George.